This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, please. It's me, Jasper William.
That was the most relaxed "it's me" I think you've ever done on the show.
It's me.
Sorry, guys.
Jasper William. Jasper William Cartwright. And I am joined today by...
Hello. I'm Olivia Kennedy, but you can call me Liv. See that, Jasper? Done. Easy peasy. So quick, so simple. Oh, wow. I've never once taken too long to do my intro.
And me, Jeremy Cobb. But Lexi Black Girl
like Mario
Mage calls me.
It's me,
Jeremy Cobb. But Lexi, aka Black Girl Mage, calls me jcobb.com. Yay. That's right. The pattern of nice. Me being representing brands continues. Except this time, I guess I'm representing my own brand.
I mean, you better claim that Jeremy. Domain. That domain name.
Yeah.
Name,
oh,
domain,
but that domain. Was good, though. Domain.
Yeah, I did that on purpose.
Why has no one said that before? That seems so logical. It's right
I'm
there.
I'm saying domain. Now on purpose.
Wow. Yes. Jeremy,
but it's not just us here. We have a guest, everyone. I would love to. We are being... The crowd in Halfling Stadium is going berserk right now. I would like to welcome to the virtual stage writer, game designer, professional GM, and my dad, D'Angelo Murillo.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
Lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Good to see you, son.
He spits up on D'Angelo.
I don't know why
day.
I wrote down my dad.
Oh,
but
he
said to add in dad. And for some reason,
hey,
I wrote
it worked.
My dad.
You did it. You know, that's on me. It's all good. And I'll take that title.
We're
you know?
Owning it now.
That's fine.
Welcome to the podcast, Dad.
Does that mean that we're getting all of our parents on here? My mom will be so confused, guys. We can't do that to her. Mm. She'll be so confused.
Yeah, so what's your favorite TTRPG moment? Like,
Well, maybe we should instate this, that we should, like, without giving them a choice, just to have someone from the TTRPG space adopt us. And we can bring them on as our, like, TTRPG parents. So, Jeremy, you've already filled a slot. You can have another parent. Of some description. Think about who you want. But that
no
will be
question.
D'Angelo's partner from now on.
I see.
Perfect.
Yes.
Only sub to anime. That's my only request requirement. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Of course.
Jasper,
Liv, you said you had a question?
No, there's no question about mine. Brennan Lee Mulligan has the most dad vibes in the world. Like, I mean, it's off. Sure. Jasper, what about
it's
you?
True.
I'm going to have Abria be my mom.
That's great.
There you go.
That would be
fair.
Yeah, nice. Fair. Yeah. I'm free
very
to be
fair.
Somebody's mom if you want anyone.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll be someone's dad.
Yes, we can all be your. You can be your TTRPG parents.
We can absolutely be TTRPG parents. But,
future guests.
We are not. I was gonna say we are not here to talk about our parents. We're here to talk about Jeremy's dad.
I know. I'm so sorry, D'Angelo.
No, you're good. So, I love this. Oh my god.
Should we kick this thing off with maybe a fact? Well, why don't we go? We'll go for a lore drop. So if you could offer us a fact. No, Liv, I'm trying to move away from lore dump. Okay,
why?
I don't like
why?
It. I don't know why we picked.
Why don't you like
place.
It?
I think we all know why.
Why? It's a lore
I actually
dump.
Don't.
We're dumping lore.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Sometimes you got to take that lore dump.
Sometimes you got to take the lore dump.
I'd say at the top of every top of every episode.
You're gonna feel so much better once you do a lore dump.
All right, I'm gonna let me do one now, and then I'll see how I feel. Okay, and see if I change my opinion about the name. But D'Angelo, this is going to be a fact about your life, something that happened, and the only rule is that you get to provide as much context as you want to, and we aren't allowed to ask any follow up questions. So it can be anything you want. And that will just exist on the internet as a fact about you, and that will be it. And it will infuriate everyone because everyone will have questions.
And oh, no one man. Will have them answered.
Oh boy. So this is one happened in second grade. I'm gonna tell you about the time I found out I was Mexican. Essentially. in second grade, February, you know, Black History Month in America and everything like that. Class, I went to a predominantly black school, and for whatever reason, the teacher in my class was like, you know, D'Angelo, like, you really like Martin Luther King Jr., you know, you always ask a lot of questions about him, you know, always all that kind of stuff. How would you like to represent your class and talk about how you are so proud to be an African-American for, you know, Black History Month and everything? And just for context, I am not African-American in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, obviously dark skin tones and people make assumptions. And my name is D'Angelo. And then, so I was like, I am black? Oh my God. And I felt so honored. Like, I was like, aww. You know, like Tupac, you know, you. Rosa Parks, Martin Luther Jr., you know, Malcolm X, you
in
know,
second
all these
grade,
other, like,
you were
exactly.
Tupac,
I was like,
you were like,
yo,
yeah, Malcolm
no
X.
One told me this. Like this is awesome.
Malcolm and X is sure my enough, guy.
So sure enough, I like told my parents, you know, hey, I got invited to speak for my class in front of the whole school. Can you guys like come? You have to be there. I'm like so excited. And they're like, what? This is awesome. Oh my God. Yeah. So sure enough, they gather in the cafeteria.
Oh, no.
Every grade. I don't know how this got passed. Like, you know, and then sure enough, I go up there and I'm like, I am proud to be African-American because of, you know, da 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 and all that kind of stuff. And then my parents are like, oh no. And then, so on the ride home, I was so excited because I was, you know, tried really hard to, you know, speak clearly. You know, at a good pace and everything like that. And then I was wondering why there was so much tension in the car. And then my mom goes, so D'Angelo. And then I was like, yeah. He's like, we have to tell you something. You're not black. And then I was like, what? No, I am black though. My teacher, who's literally paid to teach me stuff, you know, told me I was black. So therefore, I am black. And they're like, no, you have to do the math. Your dad's Mexican. I'm Mexican. Therefore, you are. And I was like, I'm black. I'm black. And I like cried so hard. And then like, and that was the day I learned that I was Mexican. And then, so. There you go.
That is the funniest equivalent story I've ever heard to finding out Santa Claus isn't real. Like, that's the same level of, like, crushing, just, like, what even is real anymore? But just not an African-American. Wow.
Big vibes of, like, having the talk with your kid, just like, okay, so the birds and the bees. This is,
yeah.
So I'm Mexican and your dad is Mexican. And
therefore, yeah, it was just like, oh man, it
that
was
is
so bad.
Phenomenal. That was that's a fantastic story.
That's great.
Wow.
No follow-ups.
I love the fact that you fully got to the like inviting your parents to school phase.
Yeah.
That it wasn't
second
even
grade.
Because I was expecting you to say, like, oh, we were having a conversation and I was like, oh, I'm doing this talk about being African American, like in the kitchen, and then telling you there and then. No. It got all the way through the checks and balances, and you stood up on stage in front of everyone. Wow.
Payoff. I mean, for us, though, that's great.
Oh,
it was
huge.
Great.
Yeah,
great
story.
Oh, yeah. Everyone enjoys hearing that story. It's so funny. And, like, oh, my God. Yeah. I was just so defeated. And then, like.
I'm so sorry.
But it's fine. I'm over it. It's like.
Yeah, no, you said no. Of course. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank
that is an incredible story.
For that amazing lore dump.
Of course,
D'Angelo. I really appreciate that. Really appreciate that.
I do feel better, actually.
That was a hefty lore dump.
I do feel better after that lore dump. So,
yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you, Jasper. Thank you.
Wow. Should we jump into the questions?
Go for it.
So, D'Angelo, we always start, whenever we have a guest, we always start by asking them to share with us their nerdy origin story. How were you born into this life? Did you inherit the nerddom. I made that reference backwards, frankly. Mm-hmm. But how did you come by your nerdery?
Yeah, I definitely owe a lot to it to my dad because he was into. So my dad and me are like polar opposites because, like, when he was younger, he was like a ladies' man, womanizer. You know, he was a cholo, which, like, if you don't know, it's like an American Mexican American term for like a gangster, sort of like a Latino gangster and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So super cool, like, you know, won every fight he's been in and all that kind of stuff and everything. But he secretly loved Star Trek and he loved Star Wars and all that kind of stuff. So, but he couldn't show that obviously back in like, you know, the 80s, 70s, whatever. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, when raising me, he introduced me to Star Wars. I didn't appreciate Star Trek because I didn't understand why they wore pajamas, but like now as an adult, I do. And I love Star Trek.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah, but like, you know, so he did introduce me to that. But what really, you know, changed my life was Toonami in like the 90s, mm-hmm. which was Cartoon Network, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Gundam Wing, Dragon Ball Z, Rurouni Kenshin, like Tenchimuyo, all that sort of stuff. And then it like sent me into a nosedive of Pokemon, Japanese RPGs and all that sort of stuff. When it comes to TTRPGs in particular, that happened in like 2008 when I was 18 years old and just graduated like high school. And like I like obviously out of all the nerdy things, Dungeons and Dragons next to LARPing was the nerdiest you can go. Like that was the epitome of like, you know, being a geek. And I wanted it so bad, but I couldn't find anyone to like play with because one, a social anxiety. Two, the internet wasn't super fully fleshed out by that point. And local gaming stores like weren't super good at like, you know, whatever. So lo and behold, that was when Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition had come out, and I took my whole grocery store courtesy clerk paycheck and gave it to the game store to get the Monster Manual, Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Player's Guide to you know, 4th edition. And I studied those books harder than any test I've ever studied in my entire life, like day in and day out. And I was listening to the Penny Arcade podcast as well, trying to understand what Chris Perkins was talking about, you know, for this sort of stuff. And then finally I had found friends who wanted to do it, and I was like, but I was so like, I had a lot of social anxiety when I was younger, low self-esteem, being, you know, brown in America, especially dark brown and all that kind of stuff, and chubby and glasses and all that kind of stuff, it's just super, you know. So when I played with them, I was like, oh my god, I got this wrong, the story wasn't really good, and X, Y, and Z, like they're probably never going to play with me anymore. And I was like, you know, end of the session, guys, you know, did you want to play again? If you don't want to, totally understand, you know, sorry for the mistakes. And they're like, we love this, can we do it weekly? Like, can we, you know, all that kind of stuff. And and I was like, you like this? Yeah, that's fine. And then sure enough, it became a situation where I started to get known as the D&D guy to other people, you know. So around our circles, they're like, they would invite me to parties because I played Dungeons and Dragons with them, and they'd be like, this is the guy I'm talking about, this is the man, you gotta be nice to him, you gotta buy him something and he will get you into his game. So I was like, you don't have to do that. And then sure enough, I became like the nerdy godfather. And then like sure enough, and sure enough, it got to the point where I had at one point four groups that all played in the same sort of universe, rivals, and it started real beef outside of the game, which is why we stopped doing it. But people wanted to fight each other, like, because of like the disputes and all that kind of stuff that was happening. So it was one of the first times in my life that I realized that I was good at something, you know, because we go through life, you know, doing moderately okay at different things, you know, but there's like never that one shining moment until that point that someone was like, you are so good at this. And it was the art of storytelling, not necessarily writing or
It's such an important thing, I think, for those kids who, you know, have like the low self-esteem or, you know, because I remember literally I can tell you the reason I became an actor was because I had a best friend when I was in primary school and he was better than me at everything. He was smarter than me. He was faster than me. He could throw further than me. He could, you know what I mean? And he was my best mate. But I remember just being like, man, it would be real cool to just be like at least on par with you at something. And then I remember we got to secondary school, high school for you guys, and I got cast in a play as the lead. I got cast as the Artful Dodger, and that's the role that he wanted. And I was like, cool, that's it now. I'm an actor. Like, and that's my thing. Like, that was, that's the one thing that I was better at him, man. I'll go, I'll do this. So I just think it's such an important, it's such an important thing when you finally get that kind of gratification of like, oh, you all really like this? Like, this is all, this is like socially acceptable. You really like this. This is, you know, helping me kind of within my, you know, because I think that socially it's like, that's like so, so important when you're that age. Like, it's so important to feel accepted and everything. So I can literally feel the moment where you were like, Wait, yeah. You want to play this?
Oh my god, it's
I actually had you worth, like, and I felt validated, and like it was one of those things where like I matter, like I legitimately, you know, I matter here, you know. So it was life changing for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Absolutely.
Had you been really in big into like creative stuff beforehand, like creating things yourself prior to getting into D&D?
Yeah, always actually. So I come from a family of artists. So my mother and father are like, you know, painters, and my mother's a published, you know, author and all that kind of stuff. But and my dad's also like a musician and everything. So it's a very creative family, which is probably why I'm like, you know, we call it like a hyper creative that just like, you know, constantly creates. Mm-hmm. But I never showed my work to anyone or, you know, did anything to try to, and never entered any contests, probably because of low self-esteem essentially. But I would always write these stories or think of the really cool thing, like, you know, like, oh, I really love watching Dragon Ball Z, but what if Raditz actually lived? What would his story be? Would he actually have a good, you know, good life like Vegeta? And like, you know, just write those fanfics and all that kind of stuff. And then, so when I got into D&D, it helped because it was just let me get those creative juices out and in a way that people could actually enjoy them. Yeah. So
I cool. also love the fact that you've just sent, I'm guessing quite a few, like probably a couple hundred people at least, into a mind palace of what, like, how powerful would Raditz have got? Like, because that's where exactly where my mind just went. Like, I fully was just like, whoa, hold on a second. I didn't even think about this.
I have a recommendation for y'all. If you have enjoyed, if any of you enjoy Dragon Ball Z Abridged, Masako X, who plays Goku and Gohan in that series, has a YouTube channel. I don't know if he still does them, but he used to do all of these What If Dragon Ball videos. Oh, and I'm pretty sure he has possibly multiple videos about what if Raditz had lived.
Because like Goku and his brother just being able to, like, you know, repair that stuff and be like, I would love to see that, you know, but
yeah.
And also being an uncle and all, just all the whole possibilities, you know, it was just, yeah. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how did Raditz feel about the destruction of planet Vegeta? I know that Vegeta himself was pretty aggressive towards Nappa, but like, how did Raditz feel about their plight? Like, Vegeta clearly held a lot of rage towards Frieza as well.
Yeah.
But it would have been interesting to see how, like, the Saiyan saga goes if suddenly it's like Raditz somehow, I don't know if what he would have done. Like, would he have teamed up with the Z fighters? All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would genuinely
feel like I'm listening to another language right now.
I know, right? I would deep dive. I would take it so seriously and be like, what if? Like, and think of all the sort of, so like, I would take it too seriously, which is why TTRPGs seem to be for me, because like, I just deep dive into lore and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And I want to see the Raditz Super Saiyan 3 hair.
Right?
What ends up looking
exactly.
Like. Because it's already Super Saiyan 3 length. Like, how much longer does
or
it
Or even
get?
One, it's just the whole thing.
I kind of imagine it goes into like a cut. Is it Cousin It? Is the one that's just
from the Munsters?
I'm just thinking, like, it's just that, but gold, right? He's just golden hair.
So
and then
good.
Occasionally, like, a fist will poke through and punch you in the face. You know what I mean? But
terrifying.
The key is,
oh,
you don't know which way he's facing. So, like,
right?
How could you even...
He's just a lump of hair.
He's just a lump of hair, and then a fist appears.
You can't read his movements.
Yeah.
The true BBEG, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, D'Angelo, so you start, first of all, I want to comment on the fact that you started with 4th edition.
Yes, yeah.
Like, that's...
Love it.
That's very unusual.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that it's actually, like, for what it was trying to do, actually a very good system, but what it was trying to do was just really different from what other people, from what most people had wanted from
it was
up to that point.
Like, very war gamey, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like,
very tactical. If it came out today, I swear that it would have succeeded, because we have Roll20 and a bunch of other VTTs that will have easier access to tacticals, because the problem with 4th edition, which I ran into, you know, was that you needed to buy, you know, the maps, the terrain, the, like, you know, minis and all kind of stuff. So it was an additional cost to everything. So it was one of those situations where you'd set up the whole scene, and I always went above and beyond for my players. And then they'd be like, you know what? I actually want to go to the potion shop. And I'm like, okay. And I'd wipe the entire board and, like, set up the next scene. And then, like, so yeah. And you could not play it effectively without using the grid, because so many things were like, you know, the opponent adjacent to you takes this, you know, sort of thing. But if you're doing theater of the mind, that's like, it's either always a yes, or it's like a weird sort of no, and everyone gets confused. So yeah, I love it though. And like, now I'm finding my own community of people who also loved it, you know, because back in 4th edition times, people hated it. They were just like 3.5 for life. And then, like, yeah, so
yeah. Okay. Well, how did then your experiences with D&D and like the awakening of being able to like being really good at something, how did that then lead to you getting involved in the actual TTRPG industry?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So back in the day when I, like I said before, when I was running the four groups, like every single week, you know, they were coming over. So three groups met at like my parents' house, which I lived with them during college, and then one at a friend's house. And my parents were getting annoyed that so many people were coming into our house and all that kind of stuff for multiple hours every, you know, time.
I'm sorry,
and my dad,
I'm super popular. I'm really sorry.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And then my dad, like, you know, would come and be like, you need to find a way to make money off this. And I'm like, oh, dad, don't be silly. There's no way to make money off of this. And then like, so sure enough, those times actually built up, like it feels like everything just fell into place where sure enough, those times had built up my storytelling, my, like, you know, people management skills and customer service and all that kind of stuff and everything. And then in a mix of, like, in 2012, I went to a, you know, convention, comic book convention, found that a lot of, like, you know, marginalized cosplayers were not getting the same representation as, like, white cosplayers. And that really got under my skin. So I started a whole blog to uplift different creatives and all that kind of stuff for marginalized creators. So those two things kind of, like, helped to, like, build that TTRPG industry sort of, like, you know, I'm ready for this sort of thing. But what happened was that I was all about my blog, going to every single convention, interviewing a bunch of people about their, like, you know, cosplay, the art of, like, you know, costume making, their, you know, nerdy passions, all that kind of stuff that went to a much deeper level than, like, you know, most of their interviewers would go. But it all came to a screeching halt when COVID hit, because all conventions shut down, you know, like everyone was indoors. A lot of cosplayers fell off the scene and, you know, did something else, you know, and the team that I had assembled had all scattered to the winds to do pursue other things, which was totally fine and valid. But for me, it was like the lowest point, because I was like, I worked so hard for years to build this up and now it's gone. Like, what do I do? Like, well, who am I at this point? And thankfully, what had happened was, I started to do, I did like TTRPG charity events, like at my house with cameras and everything like that, just to get, you know, things going. And I wanted to redo that, but in a COVID friendly space, which was like, you know, Discord and Zoom, you know, early, you know, ish stuff. So it naturally sort of warm transition got me into that sort of space. But what really happened, what really kicked things off, was I had reached out to Carlos Luna, who was a previous guest on Three Back Halflings. Love that episode. Also, I didn't drop this line, but I should have, but I'm a first time caller, long time listener, for Three Back Halflings. Hey! Like, love the show. Oh my God. So I reached out to a bunch of creatives to interview, you know, Tiny to Pass, Bria, you know, Brady Mulligan, all these people. And Carlos Luna responded back and was like, hey, do you mind if we get on a Zoom call? I just have a few things to point out to you. And I was like, okay. And then so we got into this 2-hour long Zoom call. And he's like,
that sounds like Carlos.
He's like, hey, man, listen, I just want to say that I like your stuff and everything like that. But I think that you're doing it wrong. And I was like, oh, okay. And then
like Carlos.
He gave me that straight up advice, like directly to the heart, to be like, listen, man, you are worthy, you are valid. We need you in our community to represent, you know, the Latino community and all kind of stuff. And you're hiding behind these different things, you know. And it was like, I wasn't in therapy at that point, but like later on in therapy, I was like, holy shit, Carlos knew that. And then like, so he essentially had to give me this pep talk to be like, it needs to not be like, my blog was named The Geek Life. And I was like, the blog, you know, you no longer can be The Geek Life. You have to be D'Angelo, you know, you have to really put yourself, you know, before your brand, because you are the one doing 90% of the work. You're reaching out to everyone. You're doing all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And it changed my life. No joke. So from that point on, I really worked hard to build a brand for myself, being like, hey, my name is D'Angelo. You know, I'm all about good vibes and like uplifting our community, marginalized creators, you know, raising money for charity events, X, Y, and Z. And then like that pep talk really led to that, and just enough self-esteem, like that level up in that JRPG to unlock the skills of, like, you know, loving yourself and, you know, think you could do all the things. And exactly. And then I just started to, like, you know, all right, I'm going to organize events. Who wants to be in this? All right, you, let's go ahead and do this. And then, like, let's keep doing it and then learn what we did, you know, wrong, and then, you know, improve. And it ended up leading to open doors for a bunch of stuff. Like, D&D Beyond had me, like, come and be on a guest on their stuff and write for them, which I still do and all that kind of stuff. And, like, you know, Renegade Games asked me to be on their like Vampire the Masquerade stuff. So it's like really opening doors, and it all happened one because of Carlos and two because of my past experiences and everything of those sort of pep talks and just like, I can do this. I'm worthy. I'm valid. It doesn't matter, you know, that I'm not the type A body or like, you know, whatever, like I can still contribute meaningfully. And, yeah, and that leads me to this point. Yeah, and then now I'm on my favorite podcast, being able to like be a guest and all that. So, it's like,
well, the question is, are you going to listen to this episode? Because like I always feel like I struggle to listen back to the episodes I'm in.
You know, I do just to make sure. Like, how many ums did I do? Or am I up to 500? And then like, you know, try to improve the next time.
Well, I want to let you know that all of your ums are perfectly. We welcome all of your ums here. So please, don't feel
thank
like
you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
We're a pro podcast.
I was literally, I just did half. And I was like, now we've said it. I don't know what noise to make because saying feels like a little bit like on the nose for this particular moment. Oh no, I did it again. That was genuinely
a whole episode. Yep.
I'll jump in.
Please,
don't worry.
Please.
I wanted to ask actually. Mm-hmm. Considering that part of how like the way that you got into the industry was heavily related to your status as a person of color. Mm-hmm. What has your experience been like as a brown person, as a person of Latin descent, as a person of color, in both the hobby as a whole and the industry specifically? And I say this also in light of, it seems like there's like a conga line of posts that every few weeks or every month, somebody will make a post about how to engage with people with the industry or how to engage with the hobby. And a group of people of color will emerge and kick them and say, no, excuse me, you seem to be completely missing the experience of a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm.
From you, how has it been for you specifically?
Yeah, so my personal journey has been a really like, you know, night and day experience. So growing up, being exposed to Lord of the Rings, X-Men, Star Wars, all these awesome like pillars of geekdom is just drowned in white, you know, sort of like, you know, Eurocentric sort of like stuff and everything. And I didn't see my culture represented anywhere except for the like, you know, sexy ladies or the criminal or the like, you know, comic relief or the just worker who's like, you know, whatever. And it really destroyed my self-esteem because I was like, oh my God. And the darker you go, the less you're worth as like, you know, a Latino and everything. So that's like been a big experience sort of with me. So I really like tried to shy away from being Mexican American and Chicano and everything, and didn't want to acknowledge it at all and embrace other things, you know. So I like deliberately did not learn Spanish. I deliberately did not try to eat like, you know, Mexican food or anything like that. But then it all came to a head when I got to like my, you know, 20s or so when, because I was playing Dungeons and Dragons and I was, obviously you walk into like a 2008 game store and you do not see much representation whatsoever, not from Warhammer, Dungeons and Dragons, any of these sort of games that are major. They do not care. I don't want to say they do care, that's very strong, but they don't cater to the marginalized experience or anything like that. Maybe they'll have like one for like, oh, see, we're not racist. We got like one person here and like all that kind of stuff. So that So it all sort of like contributed to this feeling that like, I don't matter. I'm not worthy. My story shouldn't be told because it's not like X, Y, and Z. But then I got into a group of friends. And again, I had super low self-esteem. I kick myself for this all the time. I got into like a group of friends, quote unquote, that were like diet and sometimes full blown racist. And like, I would put up with it because I was like, if I don't have these friends in my life, I won't have anyone. So like I would make excuses for them and all that kind of stuff. But then their racist antics really started to rise and started making Mexican jokes and cracking at me and like, oh, but you're not really Mexican, so you can't get mad at that and all that kind of stuff. And then it just shattered, you know, for me. I just like, I did a 180 experience where I was like, you know what? Like can I curse on your podcast?
Especially in this context.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. I was like, fuck this shit. Like I can't believe that I'm putting up with this. You know, there's a lot to be proud of and a lot of beauty in my culture and my skin tone and my music and, you know, all that sort of stuff about my heritage. You know, we contributed a lot to this country and there's nothing but pride that I should have for this. And that really influenced my work because like one of the major things that I noticed was for the like Dungeons & Dragons, the Yanti are this like Mesoamerican inspired culture that is like hardcore evil. Back in the day, they worked to try to like make it better. But they like took that heritage and bastardized it. And they did it with a lot of other cultures or whatever. And that really just got in my skin. And I was like, you know what? Every game I'm going to play, I'm going to be, you know, welcome to not only my culture, but other cultures as well. Like, this will be a safe place. And like, at least at my table for, you know, things that I want to see. I want to change this community for the better and start with my table sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I started to, like really work on that aspect, and people started to flock to me because they felt that sort of difference, that like they were used to sort of white GMs that like, which maybe try or not even try to make the situation better. And when they came to my table, they were like, this is nice. This is a good change of pace. Like, I feel welcome here. And suddenly I started noticing mm-hmm. I had a lot of like gamers that were women and like, you know, gamers that were LGBTQ and all that kind of stuff. And I just like was super down with it. And so as I got more and more into the TTRPG community, I really like stuck true to that. Like, I want to be that safe place. Like, there are other places that you can have other experiences, but at least for my table, you can be, you know, whoever you want to be, no shade, no anything. You will feel welcome and warm and safe here. And like,
it does seem to be something that like a theme, I think, that I've noticed with a lot of people that we've spoken to on this podcast and that I've just met in life, of that kind of denying your kind of your cultural heritage to fit in, mm-hmm. you know. Like, I literally, if we ever released a video version of this, you'll see me reeling back in actual physical pain. Yeah. When you said, you commented saying, oh, you're not really Mexican or whatever, like that just, you know, because I used to have that one all the time, like, oh, but you're not black though, you know what I mean? And it was, exactly. And it's just, I think it's such a, it's that real, like, to coin a Nunati phrase, it's a real sparkling racisme, you know what I mean? It's that kind of just mm-hmm. like real light touch where it feels like it would be out of place for me to just lose it at you and just,
yeah,
do you know
exactly.
what I mean? And call, or to call you out and to say,
yep.
you know what I mean? It feels like it would be wrong of me somehow because it's not quite enough. Like, you didn't say any particular word or phrase, you were just mm-hmm. kind of having a little bit of a jest, but like, it's a real,
you can't take a joke, we're all friends
exactly.
here.
Exactly. That like, exact it's such response
a,
yep
but it's such a cutting comment, I think, because it's effectively yeah. like saying, well, you don't really belong with those people, but you mm-hmm. don't belong with mm-hmm. us, do you know what I mean? It's yep. like, it's like you're saying, I'm denying you access to, you know, somewhere you might feel comfortable mm-hmm. and I'm denying you access with us because you're also not mm-hmm. one of us. Do you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
Or they're trying to do it in a weird reverse psychology way, where they're sort of saying, oh, no, don't be with them, be with us, because we're, it's, do you know what I mean? What we are right. is somehow different, yeah. or, do you
or
know
even
what I
like
mean?
You're one of the good ones.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, you're not like those other.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yep. 100%. Yeah.
But I think it's, but then just really quickly, James, I'd just love to ask as well, like, when then, because for me, and if, you know, if you've listened to the show or anyone's listened to the show, you know, this podcast was a huge part of me exploring, you know, yeah. a lot of my blackness, you know what I mean? Like, especially yeah. in some of our earlier episodes, because it was during a time where I was coming to terms with a lot of that stuff and really, mm-hmm. you know, kind of going a little bit through that revelation. And for some reason, I decided to do it in public. But I'm just yeah. really interested to know, you know, how did that feel for you getting to, like, kind of re-embrace, you know, that Latino side, that, you know, that culture, yeah. you know, eat that food, you know, like that kind of, do you know what I mean? Like all
yeah,
of those kind
exactly.
of, like, what was that experience like for you? And then how did that enrich in your work, like enrich your work?
Yeah, it always goes in cycles, you know, it always goes like, it's a journey for sure. Because there was that phase where I was like, I fully embraced my culture, but then there would be people from my own culture would be like, you don't speak Spanish, you're not real. And it's like, ah, you know, like now I get attacked from both sides. So, and so it's really building that thick skin to be like, no, I am enough. Like I don't speak Spanish, you know, but at the same time, my bloodline can be traced, you know, back, you know, multiple generations that are still in this sort of country or sorry, in this state. Like my ancestors are from a tribe called the Yaqui tribe, which actually have been in Arizona before Arizona was even a state, sort of thing. So like, wow. I am from here, and like, they are also considered like a Mexican tribe, very like controversial, like opinions and all that kind of stuff. But essentially, like, my roots can be found, you know, sort of thing. And that, so I 100%, there's no denying that I am of Mexican heritage and everything. And I like, you know, embrace it fully sort of thing. So now at the age of 32, I 100% am proud to be who I am, like, you know, and all my flaws and imperfections, I still am beautiful and worthy and valued, you know, mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. And I try, and I can see in the community, there are people older than me, younger than me, my same age, you know, more followers, less followers, what have you, that are in their different journeys of where they like identify and with themselves, you know, and all kind of stuff. And it's always, I feel like my place to be that like safe harbor for them to be able to like embrace their culture, not me forcing them to embrace their culture, not me judging them or anything like that, or trying to force them to do whatever, but just to be like, you know, hey, today we're going to go ahead and have
this. HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit. Even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
A few like Puerto Rican inspired, you know, sort of things here. I had created a game called Emerald Templars. It is a dark fantasy tabletop role-playing game. And one thing I love about it is that I incorporated a lot of different cultures sort of into it and brought writers of those cultures to be able to share their experiences and, like, you know, build this awesome world in it. So to promote the game and do playtesting at the same time, I hosted an event and brought, you know, people together, and they're all Latino and everything. And unbeknownst to me, they were all Puerto Rican. And so it was wild to have them play the game, and then they looked at different like foods and weapons and all kinds of stuff, like, oh my god, this is from my native tribe, like, oh my god, this is from, like, you know, these sort of things. And they're like, whoa, this, what the heck? And they were like, their minds were genuinely blown, and they were so excited to be able to pick that weapon and embrace that part of their culture in a TTRPG you know, sort of space. And it really showcased that moment of validity, you know, to me, that like the work that I am doing is good because these are genuinely happy, good experiences that if I did not do this, they would not have had this experience. And who knows when they would have had this experience, because they've been playing TTRPGs for years and never had that, you know, until they sat at my table, played my game, and then, you know, were able to check this out. So it was everything, like, when I get those experiences, it just pushes me to do more and continue and just keep going, you know, and it's a wonderful feeling for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's really amazing.
Yeah. That actually leads into what I was going to ask you, which is, I've read without even realizing it, I'd actually read multiple articles that you had written for D&D Beyond.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah. As well as on Start Playing Games.
Yeah.
And there are articles on both of those sites about incorporating elements of your heritage, your cultural heritage, into your work and into your games. And I wanted to ask, can you talk about how you go about doing that? And also, please tell us about Emerald Templars, which seems to be sort of the culmination of a lot of that work.
Yeah, absolutely. So, answering this question was really hard years ago, but now it's easier because a lot of our perception of fantasy is rooted in Eurocentric sort of like, you know, stuff. So like, you know, knights and, you know, kingdoms and all this sort of stuff, are just very like, you know, like just white essentially. And, in our games that we play, it's still like very heavily rooted in that. So to unroot that sort of stuff, it's like, oh, you're not eating like, you know, turkey or whatever. You're eating tacos and enchiladas and like having horchata and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then like the music that is playing is mariachis that are actually like, you know, doing it and not like heavily focusing on it, but just simply like letting it be a part of the scene. And just like after a while, people like it really like, this was nice. This is refreshing. Mm-hmm. This is a whole new experience that I've never had, you know, to be able to do this. And the same with the names, you know, so like instead of it being like, you know, Lord, whatever, you know, Nottingham or something like that. It's like, you know, Castillo and like, you know, Camacho and all these sort of names that we've heard before and everything, but not in positions of power and respect and like knighthood and whatever other, you know, sort of things. And being able to just like rework some of those things makes it to be a whole new experience that you and there, you know, even just people of importance being like darker skin tones and having them be like, you know, of different, you know, moral alignments, you know, so they're like, oh, so they're just people, you know, instead of because I've seen other people like do this like really wrong, unfortunately. We all have it. Yeah, that's essentially what I do, is just like, you know, just mix everything around and be able to just present it, you know, and not really emphasize it. And then people start getting used to just a world where it doesn't matter, you know, the color of your skin, it matters the content of your character, essentially, you know, and that really hits home for people. And they're like, you know, I like this feeling. After people like oftentimes play Emerald Templars, they'll go to another game system and then play it and be like, I wish I was playing Emerald Templars, because like it's because everything else is so used to what you're already used to. And you just don't realize it's like the norm, you know, but it shouldn't be the norm. You know, it's oversaturated.
I think that you hit on something so key there for TTRPGs. And I think it's such a fantastic piece of advice for GMs and like creators, you know, like yourself, which is like the little details are so important because everyone has a default. Now, not everyone, it won't always be a Eurocentric default, but I would probably guess that like 80% of like the world, like the default for like a medieval time with magic and stuff will be, you know, a very like Eurocentric knights and, you know, Merlin and whatever. And I think those little details are so, so important. And like, yeah, the positions of power, all of those things, like just to sprinkle in. You know, I always love it when you get to a book and like when you're reading a good book and you know, it describes like a meal and you get like, you know, just describing like spices and do you know what I mean? Like it feels so visceral for me, like eating and smelling and things like that. And I just think it's like one of like little things like that can really transport you to a different world. And I think maybe the temptation is with, you know, oh, we're going to explore a sort of Nigerian inspired setting to go just research Nigeria and put loads of stuff in, and actually it's just like no, like what food do they eat, what's the like smells, like the what do they manufacture details, like what do they manufacture in these places, like so what's getting kicked up on the, you know, on the road, and like things like that I think is really essential. And it's actually funny, as you were talking then as well, it just reminded me that I was like, I think we were having, it was during a Three Black Halflings episode once, and it was like we were talking about biases, and I remember after the episode being like, I don't have any biases, and then I went back through my notes and I realized that nearly every single like king, queen, like duke, mayor, whatever, was a black woman. I didn't do it on purpose. Like, I wasn't trying to do that. Yes, but literally, like, every single one I was going through, like, all of the most powerful people in this empire were black women. And I was like,
amazing.
This is really teaching me something about myself. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Bad bias to have is all I'm going to say. As a black woman.
Yeah. I think basically my subconscious was like, I'm happy to be told what to do by black women. Like, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like,
let's go deeper.
Let's talk about that.
It's fine. My wife says we don't have to talk about it, so
it's fine. My wife is behind the camera right now, and she's like,
we don't talk about it.
There you go.
I feel like it's probably like a similar experience that like playing in Wagadu for the first time. It's so comforting to just be in, like, to be playing like a kind of fantasy in a fantasy environment, but just knowing that, like, you're at home in a way, you know, like it's just an interesting feeling, and it's really cool that you've been able to like capture that, D'Angelo.
Yeah, for sure. It came with a lot of learning, though, because I also fell into the trap of that a lot of people do, that, like, you know, if I do enough research, I, a Mexican, can write about, you know, like Japanese experiences, you know, which is 100% no. Like, that's no matter how much research, how much time, how much whatever you invest, you cannot tell the experiences of another culture, you know. Yeah. You need to bring in someone from those cultures to let them speak, you know. And that was a big learning curve that I had to, you know, get over, which thankfully it was very brief and nothing major, you know, sort of came of it. And it, like, led to a very beautiful and diverse team that even, like, obviously, you know, because, like, even in my case, you know, the writers that we have, like, one of them is, like, you know, from Mexico, born and raised in Mexico, came to America. I am, like, multiple generations. Like I said, like, my tribe was in Arizona, so I've been in Arizona the whole time. And then another one who is, like, you know, I think across the country, in another state or whatever. So even though we're all, like, you know, Latinos, we have vastly different experiences, you know, and that's the same thing that obviously was with the whole team, you know. So it was beautiful to see them come in and bring what they love, not only for their culture, but as creatives. You know, some people like horror and some people like, you know, other stuff. And they got to, like, really breathe life into this. And it's, like, it's so beautiful. So it's really cool. Yeah.
I just really quickly just want to jump in as well. I think that was such an important thing you just said, and I really want to highlight it, which is, like, I think a lot of the time we get either ask questions or people will, you know, one of the reasons that we wanted to talk about a lot of this stuff is because we wanted to try and encourage people of all kind of backgrounds to include, you know, more diverse elements within their games. You know, even if you're on an all white table, you know, try and have and explore, you know, these like other cultures and things like that. And I think that what you said was so essential, which is don't try and tell the experience of this culture.
Yes.
Like, don't try because that's the part that you can't know, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you can still tell us how you feel about, like, this, you know, like the sights, the smells, the things that are going on. Like, you can almost tell us your experience and your joy meeting that culture, and you can give us that gift. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's valid. But I think you're absolutely right. I really love the way you phrase that, the idea of just not trying to tell someone else's story, because that's essentially you know, where I think we really get into those pitfalls of, like, no, like, that isn't something that can be captured. That's something that is experienced and needs to come from that place, you know, that rooted place.
I feel like we've even seen, like, a bit of that in this chat today. Like, for example, earlier on, D'Angelo, when you were talking about the kind of stereotypes that, like, you saw in media growing up, like, hearing what you were saying, I was just like, oh my god, yeah. And I've never thought of things from that perspective before, and it was just like, it's I love seeing the world through other people's eyes, and that's, like, a beautiful thing that you can do if you just include more people on your team. It's just it's
exactly
no-brainer,
yeah,
you know,
and everyone grows from it, you know, like it we become better writers and creatives by, like, you know, getting the experiences from other people and being able to, like, you know, like, understand that and empathize and everything. Yeah, so it's cool.
This year I had watched the anime Cyberpunk Edgerunners, and the fact that the main character in that, the protagonist in that show, is Latino is like, whoa,
so great.
Like, you wouldn't see that in most cartoons, let alone an anime of all things. But it makes perfect sense, because I'm pretty sure the show takes place in LA anyway, so it's like, oh yeah, of course.
That's awesome.
It, Night City is kind of like cyber LA, I guess. Yeah.
Like it's yeah. Isn't like Night City canonically like descended directly from LA or like in California or something? Yeah. Like that?
I still need to play the game, so I need to like check it out. Cause I've seen like the anime and it's amazing. Oh my God. I loved it so, much.
Good. So good.
Yeah. But I also, we live in a good age where we like the work is starting to be done, you know, where like the next generations will benefit from all of our hard work and like, you know, sort of effort, which is really awesome. Because even I remember like it happened a while ago and like I'm going to probably misquote it and like all that kind of stuff. But I remember reading an article that the like creator of Fire Force, which is an anime, found out that there was a need or want for more Black representation in media. And he's like, I'll just add it to my anime. And he just like did and like made fleshed out, you know, characters with depth, you know, awesome characters, Black without any sort of resistance. You'd be like, done, you know, you got it. And then it was like incredible. And it was like, why can't this, you know, happen more? Like, and they weren't like race swapped. They were just like full blown, just like, you know,
just characters on their own.
Just,
right,
yeah, just
right.
made, you know?
Yeah.
And it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So.
Well, I think I was sort of looking towards wrapping this up. I just wanted to say, first of all, like, this is just such a joy getting to talk to you. I feel like, you know, the kind of energy that you bring to the space and the way that you like so eloquently speak about these things, you know, it reminds me of like some of the best guests that we've had on this podcast are those who are able to like eloquently articulate the in a way that like I think everyone can kind of understand and appreciate why these things are important, like within our work and within our like creativity, and not why they're, you know, oh, this is really bad if you do this or bad if you do that. But it's like, no, this is like going to help you, this is going to enrich your work. And I think that you put that really eloquently, and I really enjoyed that. So before we kind of like move to one of the last questions, I don't know if Jeremy, please jump in if you had anything else that you wanted to sort of specifically get to or cover. But I was just going to ask you, D'Angelo, if there's anything that you particularly wanted to like shout out, or you wanted to talk about something that you've worked on that just feels, you know, obviously we've spoken about Emerald Templars, but
That was actually going to be my question. Tell us a bit more about Emerald Templars. Yeah. Go into a little bit of detail so the folks out there who aren't familiar with it
can go find it. Yeah, we'll put a link, by the way, to because I'm pretty sure it's on the RPG.
Drive-through RPG.
That's one. So there'll be a link to that in the description, so people can find it. But yeah, tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, for sure. So I've loved TTRPGs for like a long time, 2008, you know, specifically, and everything. And in playing a lot of different TTRPGs, it was one of those things, and I don't know why I have this in me, but like when there's something that I really, really like want but don't have, I tend to create it. You know, like I need it to exist in some way, some, you know, shape or form, and I have to, you know, do the work to bring it to life and everything like that. So that's the same thing with Emerald Templars, where not only did I have these sort of issues with the representation of my culture in different TTRPGs, lack thereof or misrepresented or like, you know, what have you and all that kind of stuff. But also of the mental aspect of like the mental health aspect of TTRPGs. So, for example, when you play Dungeons & Dragons, you have your gear on and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, there's a necromancer down in this crypt. Let's go ahead and descend down this sort of stuff. We're seeing a bunch of dead bodies and like my teammate just got their arm chopped off, whatever. And then they like, you know, there's no impact with their mental health whatsoever. It's just like you walk out of there and it's no problem. And that always like really hit me kind of hard, because even in a situation where like, oh, these people, you know, like your favorite podcast wants to have you on to be able to talk about yourself, it's like anxiety immediately, like, you know, like just like so like I can't imagine what they go through, these characters that we play that like, you know, descend in the depths of earth and is like potentially going to face death, you know. So that was something that really spoke volumes to me. So when I created Emerald Templars, I wanted this dark fantasy experience, but also to have different aspects of the game that characters had to really pay attention to. And so instead of there being like just your HP that represents everything, there's different stress meters. So there's like, you know, your physical stress, your exhaustion, your anxiety, your anger, and your lucidity. And in this, when you play the game,
failing at different tasks or having conflicts with people, whether it be social or physical, your stress starts to accumulate. And what I found, which is really like really cool, which is like intended, but I didn't know it was going to work so well, is it led to very organic experiences in role playing where, like, you know, a character is in a social conflict with someone else and they get so much anxiety, they're about to have a breakdown. And the other characters are compelled to be like, no, like, you know, let's get involved and let's kind of calm the
situation. Jump in with the
down.
Healing, right? Jump in. Someone's down kind of things, the two stressed down.
And it's one of those things
in.
Where like
yeah,
you
that.
Have your limits, you know, you cannot do everything and you've got to like cool down whether you're, and I have mechanics in the game to be able to have your companions help you with this. So they're like, hey man, it's going to be okay. You're going to like, you have to role play it as well to be like, you know, we're going to get through this. You're going to see your kids again. You're going to X, Y, and Z and be like, okay. And it like, you know, heals your sort of anxiety. Or if someone makes you food, you know, and you eat a warm meal, you get like your anxiety restored and all that kind of stuff. And like these things that are like the little fine details of like, you know, how do you bring in income? Are you an artist? Like, you know, do you want to prove on that X, Y, and Z? Like, there's the TTRPG that I've always wanted to create. Not only that, but written by people from these different cultures that I've never like seen, or if I did see, it was like in really weird ways by other companies, and allow them free access, free reign to be able to, you know, paint a word picture of whatever they wanted to. And it's led to such incredible like lore. Like one of the like cities that we have in the game is a necromancy based city. And before you die, you have to indicate like, do you want your body to be rezzed by another necromancer or do you not want it to be rezzed by a necromancer? And it's like these like little tiny things and it's solely like, you know, open and like sort of stuff. So it's been a really beautiful experience. And every time I sit down with a group to actually play it, they come back with a really like just amazing experience sort of with it from a lot of different angles, whether it be mental health, you know, wise or just the representation aspect. And it's very like semi crunchy. So combat is like intense. So people like kind of like cool. That. So it's really cool. I really like it. And I finally completed my goal of being able to not only make a chorizo burrito and then eat it, and it gives you mechanical benefits to the game. You know, it's like in the game sort of thing. And like, you know, so it's been pretty awesome. So I like love my art. I love the game and everything. I'm always going to put it on sale. That way anyone who wants to play it won't be barred by like super financial, like, you know, like you don't have to pay $50 for it. You can just pay like, you know, right now it's on there for like $12 and it's a brand new game. So if you're ever interested in, you know, checking it out, definitely snag it, because I just want to bring that value and that sort of joy to your life through TTRPGs in my own sort of way. And if people like it, then I'll continue to build upon it and, you know, create more additional content sort of for it. So, yeah. And
it kind of sounds like as well, it would be just such a fantastic way to bring new players to TTRPGs. Cause I think that sometimes the idea of role playing kind of like raw, you know, which it kind of feels a little bit like sometimes with a lot of others, you know, having those kind of meters that, you know, just give you like a bit of a gentle indication of like how you're holding up kind of mentally, I think is just like, you know, adds another layer of like intrigue if you're an experienced player, but another layer of like kind of almost like guardrails if you're a really experienced player, you know what I mean? And just having a bit of a like, oh, okay, that's what happens if I push myself too far or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like in other TTRPGs, it's like, I'm only going to care about you when you need me, you know, when you're dying and all that kind of stuff. Like when you're on the ground, and you have no zero HP, that's only when I'm going to care about you, you know? But in this experience, it's like, okay, you're almost at your halfway point and that's like, you know, pretty bad. So I'm going to take this, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do this. Like, are you sure you want to do that? Cause we can always, you know, and it just builds this sort of organic, you know, intimacy amongst the group. And it's like, it's wild. It's like pretty cool. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, like compassion is a mechanic.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're rewarded for it.
Talk about something that we just need in 2023. Like, let's just make like compassion a mechanic. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just in life. Like, you need to get like 5 compassion points a day. I think we should just instate that as like a thing that just the world needs right now.
Roll for kindness.
For kindness. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I would love to, D'Angelo, if you've got a tale or a story or something, maybe from one of a game that you've run in this system, or just something that sticks out for you. It can be, you know, I think you've listened to the show before. It can be anything kind of hilarious, shocking, scary, emotional, whatever you want it to be, just something that sticks out in your mind. I'd love that.
one time that your character found out that they were Mexican, I think.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow.
So, it was, I think, last year or a year and a half ago. I was doing a Kids on Vroom session. And it was for charity, you know, just a, you know, simple game. I don't know why, but like, probably my ADHD or something like that, but like, hardcore procrastinated night before. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I got to write this adventure. So I like, was just like, wrote it down, got into a real big flow. And like, I was like, okay, cool. You know, this should be good. I think this will be entertaining enough for it. You know, otherwise they'll hate me and just block me and never talk to me again. And I'll die. You know, like no rest. So the next day happens and, join the Zoom call, like, hey guys, how's it going? Nice to meet you all. You know, I'm D'Angelo, I'll be your GM for this, you know, day. We're gonna play Kids on Brooms. And the story was simply that, like, they were kids at a magical academy and time had frozen for everyone but them. And they were like, oh shit, how does this, you know, what's going on? And they had to investigate it. And they're like, you know, jokes were sort of cracked and like intense combat scenes happened. But at the end of the tale, they had found out that the source of this whole thing was another magical student who hadn't been to school in a few days. And her father had actually died of a sort of a heart attack. And she was so overwhelmed by this like emotion that her magic was amplified. And she ended up causing this sort of like, you know, disruption in sort of magic. And I watched one of my players like start crying, and I was like, oh shit. And then and we use safety tools, and I asked, like, what are your boundaries? Like, let me know, I'll never, you know, have it there or anything like that. And, you know, nothing here was actually there, but it was a very intense emotional thing. And meanwhile, I heard the pings happen in my ear for like Discord or whatever, and I was in the middle of like describing this tale and the story and painting the scene of this very emotional heavy, you know, scene. And everyone was like really taking it in and then like responding in their very meaningful ways on how they want to greet this girl and comfort her and talk her down from, like, you know, destroying the world because of her grief and everything. And I like alt tabbed and went to my Discord, and the like producer who like invited me to the event was like, dude, you know, X player had a heart attack 6 months ago, and like, you know, this was like, you know, and I was like, oh my god. And I felt so bad, and like you could see it on his face once he gave that context. I could see him wrestling with these emotions and processing it, and really. And then, you know, people were messaging like, do you want us to take a break, like, do you want us to like X, Y, and Z? He's like, no, I'm fine, keep going, please keep going. And then I was like, okay. So like I you know, played it out, you know, had everything with like wrapped it up in a bow where they were able to talk her down, comfort her, and were her support group through this, and were able to make sure she had a, like a better life and everything. And there were I think a couple other players that also cried, but not as intensely and intimately as this one player. And after the session, I apologized profusely to him and was like, I am so sorry about that. I did not know. Had I known, I never would have done it. And he had actually said like, no, like, I appreciate this because I had not confronted my feelings on this for this whole time. I was denying it. I was like avoiding all this media, and I didn't know how much I, you know, felt about this. And this helped me sort of process, you know, sort of the situation. And I was like, I still feel like shit, but okay, I'm glad that this like helped you, you know? And it just really, once again, sort of showcased the art of storytelling and the positive impact it can, the true impact it can have on our souls. Maybe it's just art in general and being a creative and how much power you wield when you actually put, you know, effort into it. And it showcased in that moment. And I was like, you know, I have to proceed with, you know, caution and responsibility, you know, like when I create, because like it can lead people to feel real emotions.
TTRPGs are fucking great, guys. That's so great.
Wow.
That's so good. And you're fucking great, D'Angelo. This has been such a wonderful chat.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys.
You actually are a friendly neighborhood DM, I feel like.
Really?
Because when I see players crying, I'm like,
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah.
Somebody holds up the X card, and Jeremy's like, "No."
Message deleted. No.
We got the sanctity of the X card must be respected.
Yeah,
but if people ain't Xing, I'm like, all right, let's.
You're right.
Let's
there you
keep
go.
Going.
But I think just to wrap us up here, and we'll throw it over to you as well. But you know, I think you hit on something so important there, which is to remember that like TTRPGs essentially is storytelling, which is probably one of the oldest forms. You know, for me, it's like one of the oldest forms of humanity. Right? It's like we've kind of forever been telling stories from the moment someone scratched something on the side of a cave. You know, we've been telling stories because it is so important for that exact reason. You know, processing feelings, you know, moving forward as a society, learning how to grow and empathize and, you know, all of those things. And I think that TTRPGs are kind of really, for me, like morphing into this kind of like modern based, like almost like experience led version of storytelling, which is going to allow players and people to process that stuff like in the, you know, in their own,
in a safe space.
You know, literally I'm staying with a friend of mine who I've mentioned on the show a bunch of times, who teaches in a school, and it's a school for, you know, really kind of challenged you know, young men who have been through a lot of things. And, you know, hearing the experience of, you know, some of them who, you know, can't sit still for longer than like 5 minutes, suddenly sitting there for 3 hours playing a D&D game is just absolutely incredible. And I think the power of it really is there. And and I can genuinely say that I think the industry is a lot better for having folks like yourself in it. So thank you so much for coming.
Oh my gosh.
but genuinely, thank you so much for giving up your time and being here. We really appreciate it. D'Angelo, please tell all of the halflings, which I guess maybe includes yourself, who is listening to this right now, where can people find you on the internet and follow all of the amazing things that you're doing.
Yeah, you can find me on all social medias at @that_D'Angelo. I post a ton about on Twitter about vampires and werewolves and Star Trek, so and also TTRPGs and everything. And I'm always up to charity events, so feel free to throw it a follow. And if you ever want to play with me, just like, you know, apply to one of my games and I'll be able to bring you into a charity event or something. So yeah.
That's cool. Hell yeah. That sounds amazing.
And you have an Emerald Templar stream.
Ooh, I would be a certain dreamy, good-looking, talented guest star is going to be on the next
episode.
Wait,
I'm on there? Am I? I didn't even realize. Like, oh, that's weird.
Like, wait a second.
Yeah, hold on.
What is it? I guess this is going to come out actually in advance of that episode, so we should specifically say on July 30th.
Yes.
I will be joining the Emerald Templar stream. I'll be playing with my dad.
And just to clarify, just so no one gets confused, that is Jasper William Cartwright is going to be on Emerald Templar.
Yes.
Jasper William Cartwright.
You can't be mad at people confusing you, Jasper, if you keep pushing it.
You're right.
Look, at least the thing is, it makes me feel better because if we confuse them on the show, then at least in my head, they'll have an excuse in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas at the moment, they don't have an excuse.
If we say it, it's okay. If they say it, it really hurts.
Yeah.
That's our thing.
Oh my God.
The thing is, we're laughing and joking.
Only I get to call me that.
We're laughing and joking like it hasn't happened at least twice since we last brought it up on the podcast.
Yeah. Multiple times.
If someone's brown and bearded, they always mistake me for someone else, and like, you know, it's just like
welcome to the club, D'Angelo. I guess now you're here, you'll be joining the Jasper Jeremy canon, so look forward to that. I guess
there you go. I'll start calling you G'Angelo.
I will enjoy being called D'Angelo for a while. That'd be nice.
It's a great name.
It's a great name.
Thank you.
Strong.
Well, you can thank my parents. Yeah.
Thank you.
Amazing. Olivia Kennedy. I went for your full ass name there.
Hello,
I'm so sorry.
Yes,
that was intense.
Olivia Marie Kennedy. I'm guessing about the middle name.
Yeah.
Wait, what did you think my middle name is?
I guessed it was Marie.
No. it's actually Neve. Irish. It's Neve.
Olivia Neve Kennedy.
Olivia Neve Kennedy, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me. I am on all socials. @DustDarkMagic. Yeah.
Well done for getting your socials together, Liv.
Thank you so much. Next, it'll be my life. I'll get together. we'll get there eventually.
And it'll be just as easy as changing your social media handles.
A lot of dark magic.
It's a lot of it. I'll tell you that. Yeah. Except for Twitch, which is Olivia Does Dark Magic, because I feel like you need the name in there, you know? I don't know.
Branding.
Also, you can find me over on youtube.com/dicebreaker, which is a YouTube channel, and it's a website as well, all about tabletop stuff, all the tabletop things, war games, role-playing games, card games, all of them. Also, you should go and subscribe to youtube.com/3blackhalflings for more stuff from us. Thank you.
Jeremy Marcus Cobb, where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me, Jasperamy William Cobwright, at you can find me at on Twitter at Jeremy Cobb One, Cobb with two B's the number one. You can find me on Instagram at the Cobbmeister. But you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive, where I be streaming Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesdays we stream Fallout New Vegas with my character Slamtacular Stan, and who has yet to slam anything. And on Thursdays,
does he not
we
slam it down big style?
No, I well, I did I did actually get slammed down big style by Fisto the robot.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah, you
would have thought you would have done something else, but
yeah, you did.
I now get that reference because I've been watching Crown of Candy and a bunch of other ones.
So there you go. Yeah, there you go.
It's really good, right? It's
My god, really good. I cried at like certain episodes. Oh my gosh, it's good. It's
Episode 9, I think, is the big one that everybody's like, oh,
yeah,
that ruined me. If you haven't watched Crown of Candy, oh my god.
Go watch it.
Yeah. It's good.
It's good.
But you can also, in addition to me streaming there, you can also, if you want to play with me, I'm gonna be DMing at D3 at Sea, coming this October. Whoa. So I believe you can already go and sign up for my table. It's gonna be awesome. It's a cruise. Whoa. You can sit on a big old cruise ship me. Playing D&D.
Dream.
And it's going to be an Utarum setting. So we're going to be doing, it's the setting for Outlaws and Obelisks.
What are the dates for this, Jeremy? What are the dates so that people can see if
I'm going to tell you the exact dates in just
a
moment.
The exact
it's going to be
less time than it actually is in real life, because I'm imagining that Daniel is going to cut out some of the time.
No,
it's all gold. None of it. It's all gold. It's all gold.
Excellent
gold.
Content.
We actually get paid per minute, so we need to keep this going as long as we can, Jeremy. Yes, just make this interesting.
That is in fact.
Okay, we are disembarking from New York City on October 29th and arriving back in New York City on November 5th. Remember.
Ah, very good.
I see.
Very good.
Yes.
I will be
running a D&D campaign, an Outlaws and Obelisks setting Utarum, as well as a Paradox Perfect one-shot. So if you have listened to our Paradox Perfect one-shots and enjoyed that insanity, please sign up for some of that and experience the madness that is Paradox Perfect. I think those are pretty much the places you can find me.
It is indeed madness. Speaking of madness, you can follow me on Twitter and some of the other social media sites that aren't burning to the ground at JW_Cartwright. I don't have a Twitch. I probably
get on it.
I will have a Twitch. I am working on a YouTube. There you go. I'm announcing that here right now. Wow. Exclusive for everyone. Probably
I don't know what I'm doing.
September. And it's fine.
What are you going to be doing on this YouTube, Jasper?
I have a couple of video ideas. Yeah, I don't want to announce any of them because I'm like not sure if I'm going to hate them yet. I've basically bought someone in to edit for me because I've tried to start this YouTube 3 times now, and I've recorded a video and then I sit down to edit it and I hate watching myself with such a fiery passion that I get about 5 minutes.
Actor!
No, seriously.
This is a common affliction.
Watching myself back, I get 5 minutes in and decide that whatever I have to say is not important, the world doesn't need to hear it, and I should just quit. So
I feel that as a writer, I'm like, this is garbage, and like alt A delete or like control A.
Yeah. And so basically I've bought someone in, a very good friend of mine, who is not going to delete everything, and it's just going to make it better. So more details on that to come soon, but very, very excited to be doing that. You can follow the show, this show that you're listening to right now, at 3, that's the number 3, Black Halflings. That's 3 Black Halflings on all social media. You can check us out on Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings. It is the main way we fund the show, and it really helps us to continue to do all the cool stuff we get to do. You can also check out our merch. We have mugs coming, so keep an eye out. We will be having
need other than mugs. The 3 mugs on the show.
Am I right? But I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope that you go and check out all of DeAndre's stuff, because I just want to shower you with all the followers. I want you to get all of the people checking out your stuff. So please go and do that. Obviously, make sure you're following us, and we will talk to you next week. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire.
So long, Shire folk.
Hello.
This is me, Morgan Freeman.
Go on, signing off. D'Angelo, you gotta do it.
Oh, see you later, alligator.
Hey! Oh, he changed it. Now we're gonna have to end everyone with see you later, alligator.
After a while, crocodile.
That was a HeadGum Podcast. That was a HeadGum Podcast.